Bigfoot, Skunk Ape, Grassman, Sasquatch. Just a few of the names given to the primate-like creature said to roam the woods and remote areas of North America. Tales of this elusive being go back for hundreds of years. Is it mere myth and legend? Or is there truly something more tangible to this phenomenon? Join us on this journey as we discuss the science behind the encounters, the research and the evidence, keeping you updated on the latest findings, ideas, and hypotheses. Arrogance gets us nowhere, and closing one's eyes doesn't make things disappear, nor less real. Today's myth could be tomorrow's reality. It's time to make this subject matter less taboo. Welcome to Monster X Radio. Bigfoot without the BS.
Hey everybody, this is Gunnar Monson with Monster X Radio. The rumors of my death are greatly exaggerated. I have not been kidnapped by aliens. I was working for the government in a secret project called the Census. So that kept me really busy.
Were you counting Sasquatch?
Census
of Sasquatch or people? Just curious.
Just people. Just okay. People. So there were some areas that I went to where taking a Sasquatch census, there was probably more Sasquatches in some of the areas that I went than people. So, yeah. And as you heard, with me tonight is my good friend Shane Hardcore Corson. I bet nobody's called you Hardcore in a while, Shane.
No, they haven't.
So what have you been up to? I've been spending a lot of time in the woods this year. We had, the whole COVID debacle and wildfires here in Oregon and with work, and just, it's been kind of, as it has been with everybody, it's been a crazy 2020. You've had some really cool stuff that's happened up there in Washington. Obviously, we've done a couple shows. You and Todd Hale shared your adventures up there in Washington State, and we'll talk a little bit about that. But what have you been up to, Shane?
Been trying to survive, Gunnar. I've been trying to survive like everybody else. It's a crazy 2020. Everybody keeps talking about, can't wait for 2020 to be over. And now we're like going to go through this through 2021. And I just don't see an end to this chaos. What we're going through right now, unfortunately, hopefully. But
what was a meme I saw recently that like said, what if 2021 is like, hey, here, 2020, hold my beer.
Shut your mouth. Shut your mouth. Yeah, that's a scary meme. But you know what? We may be facing that sort of scenario, unfortunately. So, like everybody else, been dealing with this pandemic, have been dealing with work, dealing with life. But, fortunately for me, I made the move to Washington back in 2017. It's been a real blessing. It's been a real good thing because where I live, I'm very in a rural area. I can get out and go hiking and I'm not too far away from a lot of our research areas. So that's been a real true blessing and something that my family's really enjoyed. And so what I've been up to recently though, work and trying to survive and all that, I've been out hunting. So I'm a hunter. I like to hunt. Especially with my good friend and Olymp Project partner, Derek Randles. We've been out hunting back in the latter part of October, which is a modern rifle season up here in Washington. We hit it hard, unfortunately, and we're blacktail hunters. I got my elk tag and my bear tag and cougar tag and all that. I'm not really, I'll talk about some black bear experiences here in a sec, but not really after black bear, not really after elk. I could. I was really after blacktail. It's a harder species of deer to hunt, especially in these areas and the Olympics and whatnot. It's a harder species to hunt, and you take down a blacktail and you feed your family, you put meat in the freezer, but you feel like you accomplished something. So unfortunately up here, or fortunately, you know, it's kind of a funny thing. Usually, you know, it rains so much up here in the Pacific Northwest, you're kind of like, I want some sun. Well, we got it. We got a lot of sun up here, a lot of nice days. But when you're a hunter, especially going after blacktail, you're wanting those miserable kind of rainy, wet, soggy days so that it muffles your sound, it muffles your scent. And also that's when a lot of these blacktail, whether it's a doe or a buck, they start moving around. And we just had really a lot of nice weather and not really seeing a whole lot of anything moving around. You know, I have a few friends that got their buck, but the vast majority of hunters I ran into or spoken with, yeah, they're like, man, this weather is, you know, it's awesome, but it sucks because it just makes for very difficult hunting. While I was out hunting, I did have a few unique things happen, I believe. Like I said, if I was hunting bear, my season would have been over a while ago. I jumped two bear. I'm pretty good sneaker. You know, I like to, I still hunt and I do a lot of different methods. Sometimes I'll walk very slowly and hunt that way. Other times I will make myself a blind. You know, I'll find a nice stump and sit behind a stump and watch a valley or a cut line, timber line. This time around, you know, I was really adamant. Okay, well, I need to be on the move because nothing's popping out. I need to jump something or, you know. So twice now I've jumped bear. One time I got growled at. It was fairly close. I never saw it, but I knew it was a bear. I couldn't tell if it was a sow with cubs. So I'm not after bear. I just, like I would during the regular, you know, just during the, you know, out hiking, whatever. I'll leave it alone. I'll walk away. And that's what I did. And then just the last day of hunting season, I thought it was early morning too, because I start hunting before daylight, like a lot of people do. And I'll hunt the evenings as well when deer are more, you know, more on the move. Was out in this area and was walking up this trail. And just after daylight, I could start to see, and I heard something moving in the brush. And I thought, oh, shoot, this could be a buck. And I start watching this thing, and I'm seeing the huckleberry move. I'm not seeing anything else. Huckleberry movement, it would stop and then it would keep going in the same direction. And usually when I jump a blacktail, like a buck, you may spook them and they'll go a couple of yards, you know, hop, skip or run through the woods and stop. And then they'll do the same thing, thinking that they're either concealed or you don't see them or they're trying to see what you're trying to do. This thing kept going. It would stop, but it kept going. It was a bear, no doubt about it. So managed jump bear, not my quarry. Before that, the interesting thing I wanted to get to was that you hear a lot of stories of hunters having Sasquatch encounters. Obviously, this time of year, at least up in Washington and Oregon, you do in certain areas, you do have a lot of huckleberry present. You know, I've been out hunting. It's been a lot of huckleberry, a lot of other berries. You got mushrooms and just a lot of food out there. And you got, of course, these salmon runs, still, you know, different salmon runs where now they're pretty much spawned out up here. So you got a lot of carcasses and you got a few stragglers coming up these streams, easy pickings. And you hear a lot of hunters having these Sasquatch encounters this time of year. Makes a lot of sense to me based on the food sources and the relatively temperate weather we have up here in the Pacific Northwest up in the Olympics. I mean, in these lower elevations, you do have a lot of great weather. So I was fortunate to have had a couple of experiences, no sightings or anything of that nature, but over a span of a week on two different occasions, I heard vocals and they both, it's kind of funny. Both of them happened towards the end of our day. We're talking, 7:30 in the evening. And the second one was probably, 5:30 in the evening. The first vocal things that I heard, I was out hunting with Derek Randalls and a fellow partner of ours, Matthew Jones. And we had a central point to meet up where we parked the truck and we hiked in. We all were supposed to meet back at the truck at a certain hour. And I got there first. I got there a little bit early and it was about 7:30 at night. It was dark by then, and I'm standing by Derek's truck as he drove us out. And I heard this, you know, what would sound like the Ohio howl, just a distant sound like the Ohio howl, but not quite as long. And I thought, did I just hear that? Now, I did have my recorder going, as I always do when I'm out hunting, because I like to have, you know, you just never know what's going to happen. You know, David Ellis always tells you, whatever you're doing, you're out in the woods, bring your recorder. And so I did have my recorder going. I had it in my pocket. So it's a little bit muffled, the beginning of that recording, and perhaps we'll play it here on the show. It's a little bit muffled, but then you hear the rest of it pretty clear. And the funny thing was, though Derek Randall's never heard this, Matthew Jones was probably several hundred yards away, making his way back to the meetup location at Derek's truck. He heard it. And when he got back to the truck, I asked him, we were talking for a few minutes, and I said, hey, did you hear anything? He's like, yeah, I heard this like long howl. And it was fairly distant, but it was very, very interesting given the location we're in and knowing that there really wasn't anybody else out in this area whatsoever. So that was interesting. The second time, and this was about 4 days later, same area. We're meeting up with the truck, and it was still daylight, and we were meeting up a little bit earlier. So I made it to the truck first, and I decided to check out this trail I hadn't been down. So I walk about, probably 70, 80 yards away, knowing I had about 10 minutes or so to meet back up the truck because I got there a little bit early. And I get down this trail and I hear this really familiar yet odd whistle, just a, I mean, very human-like course. I'm not doing it justice. Human-like course whistle. And instantly the hair raised up on my arms because I was like, wow, not only is that close, but I felt it. I felt that whistle. That was not a bird. Wasn't a cat. I'm like, wow. And I'm realizing I'm about, you know, 70, 80 yards away from the truck. And it was close. And it came from a very, very thick part of this hillside that was, you know, once again, thick in huckleberry. You can't see anything in there. It's very thick, 6, 7, 8 feet off the ground. And I went, wow, okay. Well, I've said this on the show before, I don't like whistles. Usually when you hear a whistle that you maybe associate with a Sasquatch or at least something you're not familiar with, I've always had bad experiences. So I heard this whistle and, whoa, okay, it's interesting. And then I'm kind of making my way back to the truck slowly. I'm listening, and I hear this whoop, and it came from the right of that whistle. And that whoop was clear as day. It was a very crystal clear whoop. And I knew Derek wasn't in this area. I knew that actually it was just the two of us that day. Matthew Jones wasn't hunting with us. He only came out with us to hunt the one day. Then I got a little weirded out because I just had the impression that I was being surrounded or, you know, and you know, I know it's a mental thing, you know, because when I go out hunting, I'll be dropped off way before an hour before daylight. And I have to get from point A to point B. So I'm going through the woods or logging trails or where I'm going in the complete darkness. And on your way back at night, you're doing the same thing. I mean, at night when you're done hunting, you'll turn on a light, you know, so, you know, things mess with your brain. And, you know, I consider myself a pretty brave guy, but not stupid. So, I just got an uneasy feeling when I was out there that time with that whistle and that whoop. So I'm heading back towards the truck and after hearing this stuff, and I thought about, well, should I go investigate it? But what are you going to walk into? A bunch of thick huckleberry with no exact direction. And you probably won't see anything anyways. Maybe you will, you know, but I decided to make my way back to the truck because it was getting dark. And here comes Derek Randall's up the trail. And Derek's looking at me because I stopped and I was listening. He's like, hey, you okay? And I'm like, yeah, man, I heard the oddest whistle and a whoop. I'm like, did you hear anything? He's like, well, I'm coming down the trail and I heard like a kind of a scream, which I never heard. He heard some sort of scream or coming up the trail. And he just looked at me. He's like, huh, okay. I just kind of passed it off and I said, well, this is what I heard. So I walked back down the trail because I was curious now. I'm like, okay. And never heard anything else after that. But unfortunately, that time I did not get that on a recorder. I was full hunting mode and I did have a recorder with me, but I didn't have it going. I had it going during most of the day and I turned it off. Figured Derek was going to be back any minute now, and I was wrong. So no, that was recorded. I did get that long howl, the first one I heard 4 days prior, recorded. So point being is, I can't say any of that was Sasquatch related, but it was very odd. It didn't sound like anything that I was familiar with, and it sounded very much like some of the other stuff that we've had we've recorded in the past. Sound like other stuff that, in conjunction with other stuff that we recorded in the past. So, and we're in areas where there's been sightings and reports and tracks found and stuff like that. Because a lot of the areas we hunt, you know, it's also areas where we do, you know, sometimes we do research in or we've gotten reports from. So it made perfect sense that maybe if what I heard was Sasquatch related, that they would be in this area because it's very temperate. You know, you got deer and bear obviously moving through these areas and cats. We got a nice cougar on camera up there. But you have all the huckleberry. I mean, the huckleberry then, we've had some frost now. I guarantee there's still huckleberry in these areas, but we had some frost recently. And so that's going to start killing off all that huckleberry and other berries out there. But really, relatively speaking, temperate, remote, and beautiful makes perfect sense. Yeah, the first time I've been out hunting and heard anything like those vocals. And to have other individuals around you hear stuff while hunting really added an element of, collaboration there. And so, I mean, they weren't familiar with that stuff either, those sounds, other than, you know, maybe what we associate with Sasquatch. So, yeah, Gunner, that's what I've been up to lately. We'll get into some other stuff here that I've been obviously jumping on a bunch of other different podcasts to talk about. A recent documentary that myself and a few others from the Elint Project have did partake in that's now on Amazon and a few other sites and locations. So, yeah, that's basically what I've been up to, Gunner. Do you have any plans to get out and do anything?
Well, I'm hoping to get back to our original Tillamook research area and follow up on some information that I got. Quite a while back from Cliff Berrickman. It always sucks when life gets in the way of you know, your Bigfooting. that's what I feel like this year has been, especially with all the other weird stuff that's been going on. So, yeah, I'm wanting to get out. Actually drove through our research area this last week and didn't see any Bigfoot, but I did have a deer run across the road in front of me. So it was... there is wildlife up there. I know that our good friend Larry has still had some weird stuff happen up there.
Yeah.
There's some logging going on up there right now. So I mean, because I'm pretty sure that we've had some experiences up there that were Bigfoot related, though I did not see Bigfoot, but some of the things that have just happened. And it's funny talking about whistling, it brought back the night that Larry and I were walking down the trail and we both heard whistling coming from different directions and then got trailed out. So like, yeah, that, and then you always associate whistling with something bad happening. And it's like
a bad omen. I mean, between my time in Tillamook, Larry and I had and I've talked about this on the show as well before about hearing whistles and nothing necessarily bad happened.
Cody.
Larry's dog acted very weird. And then, of course, my time up in Mount Hood, hearing whistles, had a tree come over near our camp. And now I'm hearing, it just seems it's kind of like a bad omen. I don't know exactly what the whistle means. If it's got to do with Sasquatch, I lean that way. But this particular whistle, and then, you know, working with the likes of Chris Spencer and other individuals that have had whistle experiences, they've had the same sort of experience where nothing great happens afterwards. And I'm sure that's not everybody's experience, but that's been mine where these peculiar, almost human-like, but coarse whistles. And that one I heard back in late October, I felt that whistle. It was, you know, it's almost like people would describe when you hear like a certain roar, you know, from a Sasquatch and they feel it, you know, Cindy Dosen comes up, she got her roar up there in Vancouver Island, she felt it, you know, and just reverberated around her body. This whistle, like I felt it. And my hair stood up on my arms. I just felt it. I was like, wow, that was like a crazy, coarse, powerful whistle. I don't know. You know, I can't really describe it. But yeah, so whistles are weird in that manner when you hear one of that caliber and that nature.
I'm interested in what the project that you took part in with OP and this documentary that you've been on going on podcasts recently with, like you said, David Ellis. I know that there was one recently where Dr. Meldrum was also there and Derek has participated, called Sasquatch Among Wild Men. Can you tell the Monster X listeners a little bit about how that came about and what it's about? Let's get in that a little bit.
Yeah, so be honest with you, I've yet, it is out on Amazon Prime and you can buy the DVD and it's other avenues. I couldn't tell you where to watch it. You'd have to just look it up, Sasquatch Among Wild Men. But basically, about a year ago, at one of these symposiums, I was approached by an individual from Canada named Darcy Weir, and he's a documentarian. He does a lot of different stuff. He does stuff with like UFOs and Bigfoot, and I mean, not combined, but he does a lot of different paranormal or and cryptid related stuff.
And thanks very for nice. Clarifying that, by the way.
Oh yeah, I have to. Yeah. Yeah, he's dead. If you listen to any interview that Darcy Weir does, he'll tell you he believes they're completely separate, but very interesting. And you know, just like a lot of people, they're interested in the weird, the paranormal, the cryptids, all that stuff. I mean, just fascination, you know, ancient Egypt, all that stuff. This guy is that, just interested. And I'll tell you what, he's such a gentleman, just a fantastic guy. I love his accent. You know, he sounds American until he starts saying, you know, and different things. I just love it. Yeah. So, but anyways, he approached me over a year ago and said, would I be interested in doing something, you know, joining a documentary? And he sent me a link to a documentary he did from, I think it was either 2016 or 2017, where he had Dr. Meldrum from Idaho State University join him. And I watched that documentary. The name escapes me. I'll maybe put a link when I post the show. But I thought it was a great little documentary. I was like, wow, okay, well, this is something I'd be proud to join in on. You know, a lot of us turn them down all the time, especially major networks. I like, you know, like Seth Breedlove stuff and Darcy Weir stuff. I like documentaries and stuff of that nature where you know the direction, you know what the producer is about. You join some of these shows on TV and we turn them down all the time. I've turned down, I'm not going to go into names, but I've had friends join them and, you know, God bless them. Go do what you want. But we turn them down all the time. And so, because they don't give you creative control, they don't they want this, they want rights to that, and I just and you know, and they'll maybe sometimes they'll offer you a little bit of money, you know, for clips or audio or whatever. Rarely do they offer you, and they'll maybe pay your travel expenses. Rarely do you make any money off of these short-term documentaries or reality shows. Very rarely. I usually turn them down, as does the Olymp Project in general, because they're not going to put a good portrayal or light, you know, light on what we're doing or what the subjects of matter is about. The only reason we really do any of this stuff, not for our 15 minutes of fame. I mean, it's just ridiculous. Really just a platform to talk about some of the stuff we're doing, some of our work, some of our beliefs, our approach, and highlight some of that and maybe get more people interested, maybe get academia, scientists interested because they got something to watch now. For us, it's all about the platform. You got a good platform. Well, you're asking us to provide something for you, then at least show the stuff in the light that we're trying to, you know, provide it with. Don't mess with it. So I was proud to join it with Darcy Weir, and I managed to get a hold of David Ellis and Derek Randalls to join me. Knowing that Dr. Meldrum was already a part of this, Darcy Weir had gone out to Idaho and filmed with Dr. Meldrum. Extensively with Dr. Meldrum. Dr. Meldrum's a huge part of this documentary. While we were up at the Sasquatch Summit last year in Ocean Shores, Washington, back in November, just, you know, relatively short time from when the whole pandemic set in, Darcy Weir happened to, you know, he showed up and he interviewed Derek Randalls and David Ellis and myself. And though I wish we had more time to record with him, we managed to get some really good segments in there, and I provided Darcy Weir with some photos and some material for his show, which I've never done before. But Darcy Weir really did a good job, so I wanted to provide him with some, you know, something he could, just beside us talking on it on TV, on his documentary, I wanted to provide some some visual background stuff so people could look at, you know, and there's a lot of the stuff that we share at these symposiums. So for some, it won't be new. For many, it will be. If you watch the documentary, you'll see a lot of different photos. And as I'm explaining certain things, you'll see, you get to visually see what I'm explaining rather than me just waving my arms around, you know, like a Muppet and talking. So that I think that's kind of unique and neat. I haven't seen the documentary yet, but I know Darcy Weir interviews some individuals from China and I believe from Russia. And he talks about nests being found in other countries. And I know Darcy Weir in this interview, in this documentary, talks about, you know, and I don't know the exact angle that he's coming from, but I think I do. But I got to watch it before I really comment. But he was talking about, you know, the Bering Strait, the land bridge that connected North America originally, you know, up through Alaska and Russia and China and all the, you know, so this Bering land bridge that maybe these, the Yeren and the Almas or say the abominable snowman as they call it, or the Yeti, maybe they're all related and there's connection and people are describing the same sort of thing basically. And they're finding the same sort of stuff, tracks, hair, nests. Maybe there's a correlation there. I think that's the approach he came from. I've yet to see, like I said, this whole documentary. I've seen it bits and pieces that have been shared with me. I just have to sit down and watch it. So I'm looking forward to it. I think it with Dr. Meldrum being on board with this, anything he does, I'm pretty much right aboard with that for the most part. And then having Derek talk about his encounter, Derek shares his encounter and some other stuff on this documentary. And David Ellis gets into audio and spectrographs and visually looking at audio that is so underappreciated and not really shared or talked about on any sort of Bigfoot related TV show or documentary. For me, it's something that needs to be shared more of and talked about more of. And I was really stoked that David Ellis got a chance to kind of get it, delve into that. And Darcy Weir gave him that platform to discuss. We could all listen to audio, right? And get excited about listening to audio, but has anybody stopped and looked at audio? I mean, and he explains how he does it. And I thought that was really neat. And it's about time that was a topic of discussion and a topic that a documentary included in their production.
Well, that's awesome because Bigfooters, myself included, like to consume all things Bigfoot and a lot of times we're disappointed with, you know, what people put together. I know, like you said, you guys, the Olympic Project does get approached all the time with different projects and to have something that sounds like it's a winner, I'm looking forward to watching it. It's all over basically anywhere that you can watch video on the internet, you can find it. While you were talking about your experience doing it, I looked it up and there are previews, you know, and it's on Amazon and all over the place. So give it a watch. We'll put a link in the underneath this episode that you can go and give it a check it out. At least we'll put a link in there for the preview and you can decide for yourself. But if you are into Bigfoot, as I know if you're listening to this, you must be. This looks like a good documentary that's done with out that tongue-in-cheek thing that is such an annoyance to yes,
exactly
people that are, you know, take the subject seriously. I like being entertained by Bigfoot stuff, you know, but that's not in a documentary. And I hate when people are, you know, come at it with that, like it's a newscast where they make fun of it. And that irritates me, as I'm sure I'm not alone in that. I know that people that have had experiences and then they see that crap is, it's annoying, you know, like, yeah.
Yeah. I don't personally want to partake in any of that stuff. And I'm sure you don't, mm-hmm. Gunner. And I know I can speak for not just the OP, but for a lot of people either watching or partaking in it. They don't want to be involved in that stuff. They a lot of people take this subject matter serious and at least if they take it semi-serious, they want to see something less tongue in cheek, as you said, and more, you know, on that, you know, more National Geographic like, or at least a serious look and not a silly a silly thing. You can go find out on YouTube or anywhere else. So I think Darcy Weir did a great job with this documentary and, you know, Sasquatch Among Wild Men. I was going to mention one of his other works. Maybe some of you guys are familiar with it. It's on, I believe it's on Amazon Prime and many other things, maybe even on YouTube by now. It's called The Unwanted Sasquatch. And the unwanted is spelled UNWONTED Sasquatch. So The Unwanted Sasquatch. So this documentary is kind of like a follow-up to that documentary. And I really enjoyed The Unwanted Sasquatch. So that was the one that Darcy Weir had shared with me originally. Hey, this is well done. And I'd be honored to help out. And I'm honored that you asked me to be a part of it. So yeah, so that's that. Check it out and hopefully you enjoy it. If not, sorry, but I think you will.
It's good to see another good documentary. Not that you can't mix that. One of the best examples where entertainment was mixed in with Bigfoot was Finding Bigfoot. To me, I mean, there were some things that I thought were, you know, farcical. I mean, when they put Bobo in a dress, that was a little much for me. But seeing Bobo in a dress, I don't know, it might have still been worth it. But the overall, I always like refer to Finding Bigfoot as, you know, this generation's in search of, that it brought an awareness of the subject to the masses, basically. And so I have a large appreciation. And for the most part, there was a lot of good stuff in Finding Bigfoot. It's funny because when I've joked in the past that, like, when I saw Bobo in the dress, you know, that's when Finding Bigfoot had jumped the shark, which means the episode, the series is not much longer. They have that, you know, oh, what was it when they had the Martian come on the Flintstones, you know, that the Flintstones had jumped the shark. But I liked Finding Bigfoot. It was entertaining and you had to take it for what it was. It was a TV show. Their appeal was to a broader audience than just Bigfooters. So,
of course. Yeah. These production companies that work for, you know, major productions, you know, major networks, I get it. They have to hone in on not just the Sasquatch group, but they have to reach a broader audience. Otherwise the show's cut. They don't get to keep doing what they're doing, especially when it comes to either reality shows or short-term series. They have to, I get it, but they're still, and this is something, I mean, I take to the bank and I really think about, because Derek and I, Randall's and I talk about this, you know, look at the success of such a show as Deadliest Catch. And if you're not familiar with Deadliest Catch, it's basically a show about different boats that do a lot of crabbing out of Alaska, out of the Bering Strait, very, very dangerous waters. These groups, these captains on these different boats take their crews out and they go for, you know, different species of crab. And it's basically honest in your face stuff. You get to know the captains, you get to know the crew, you get to listen to them on their good days, you get to hear them on the bad days. These captains will yell at the production crews, like, get that beep out of my way. You see the dangers.
Yeah.
So, right. So basically, to me, that is like, I mean, I really enjoyed Deadliest Catch. I used to work on a crabbing boat for about a year and not up in Alaska. But I understand a lot what they're going through, but you don't really need to fake anything. You don't need to add anything. I mean, your biggest issue there is editing, because you have so much material. So I think you get the right, if they want to do something of that nature, you get the right group or individuals together and you do something like that. You know, if you're going to do a real good production, a real good cult reality or whatever, you do something like along the lines of Deadliest Catch and you have yourself a winner. Get to know the individuals that are actually out there researching their backgrounds, where they're going, what they're doing, how they're doing it, and let them be themselves. Don't try to coerce them into being something they're not. Let them be themselves, you know, but get a solid group together. They're actually going to maybe accomplish something or find some really unique stuff and don't plant evidence. Don't do any of that. There's no need.
Yeah.
You get the right area with the right people. That will sell. I'd watch that because I love, like, you Sasquatch related stuff, but that's something, you know, I think of Deadliest Catch, just what an amazing show. And it's one of the longest, if not the longest running, reality show or reality TV out there. because it's so captivating and it's dangerous and it's unique and it's different. And so for the future, I wish more producers would look at that, and networks would look at that angle rather than, you know, this quick shock and awe and, oh, you know, yeah. Anyways, done with my spiel.
Yeah. the hairiest catch. I like it. Yeah. That's
the hairiest catch. There you go. That's like, hey, there you go. There you go. The hairiest catch. That's funny.
But there is a thirst for the information, but there is, like, again, balancing the entertainment value, because, you know, sitting around watching people sit around the fire and wandering through the woods, you're going to have to spend a lot of time in the woods doing that to get that. That was one of the things that really worked with Finding Bigfoot. And I'm not here just to, you either like Finding Bigfoot or you didn't. I liked it. They came up with a formula that worked with the town halls and then interviewing witnesses and then going and picking a location. That's something they could do every week. You know, it's just coming together and finding a way to. And then it kind of felt, you know, after a while, like, wait, they had stuff happen there. Go back to that location. Don't leave. Go back to the location where stuff happened.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's, you know, that was the nature of the show. So finding something, and they experimented that with one location with another more recent Bigfoot reality. And I'm putting air quotes for that show, and I'm not going to mention the name of the show because I was severely disappointed in the outcome. And the idea of the premise of putting a group in one location and seeing what happens over a period of time, I think. And again, you spend enough time out in the woods with you know, you're going to have some the stuff that's interesting. You spent our group up in Tillamook had over, but again, it was over quite a period of time, had some stuff that I think would make us somebody watching TV make the hair. I know that it certainly made the hair on the back of my neck stand up.
Oh yeah. And I'm just talking about, so you can talk about the unknown stuff, but I think a lot of good TV is the known stuff. You know, you get on TV running into a bear or a cougar or, a difficult scenario, the area you got to traverse through. Sky's the limit there, and it'd be good TV. You know, I'm not really my forte to partake in. I'm more about short-term stuff and definitely want
to. I don't know.
I want a platform. I'm too interested in the Sasquatch phenomenon. I want to study. I don't have time to do TV, and I don't have any energy or find short-term stuff, but. Yeah, there's a lot of other great investigators, groups, and research.
You've got a great face for TV, though.
Yeah, I've heard that before. As far as you got a great face for radio.
that's what they tell me. Is that you got a face for radio? Thanks. Yeah.
Nope. Yeah, no, thank but you.
You can never say never, because you know somebody approached you with the opportunity to go do actual Bigfoot research in the manner that is acceptable to you, and you could be in the woods. The balance there is because, you know, you have a family at home. We have families at home. So it would be difficult to go out and hang out and be separated for an indefinite period of time. But
I'm capable, I guess that's never going to happen.
Not desirable.
not desirable. That fashion. Yeah. I mean, I'd rather you know, have the equipment and the time and the know-how to get out there and do stuff and not worry about a camera following me around. You know, if you're going to do something like that, I might as well do Survivor Man stuff and have a camera with you and you do your own work and send them the material.
True. He said a few interesting things happened.
Yes. Not bad.
Nothing definitive, but yeah. Yeah. I mean, I always thought that the idea of the Falcon Project, for those of you that don't remember that, you're haven't been listening to Monster X long enough, because the Falcon Project was this idea of having a group come together and go to a specific location for a period of time, and they would stay in there and only come out for supplies or have supplies brought into them, and they were going to have the part of it, which I thought was a good premise, the idea of having an airship that I thought was, though it might have been neat, it was kind of unnecessary. But yeah, I like the idea of the Falcon Project, and that could have been a good TV, people being in the woods for a long period of time in an area that had a history. But yeah, I'm looking forward. I am going to watch Sasquatch Among Wild Men, and I know I'll see some friendly faces there, some familiar faces. I'm going to go back. I actually had not heard of the Wanted Sasquatch. That kind of reminds me of what something that like Julie's experience would be called. Right, she's, yeah. She's the Unwanted Sasquatch Witness or Donna experience. You know, she was definitely had an unwanted Sasquatch in her very backyard. So folks, if you are interested, we'll put the link in here to go check it out.
Yes.
And you can leave comments below about what your feedback is on the documentary. But be kind. Shane, is there anything else? Anything else you've been up to, or you want to? I know you have another podcast you have to be on this evening.
I do. So, yeah, I got to run here. I got another interview for that documentary coming up here in about a little bit over an hour. So yeah, got to run.
So
definitely will be. Definitely will be getting out to the woods here. I'm doing the late season hunting thing. It's only for 4 days. In between there, I will be back up in the Olympics, joining some friends, social distancing, but joining some friends out in the woods, doing some stuff up there. So I'm looking forward to that. And I'm really looking forward to, you know, pandemic aside and all this chaos, the next couple of months, just because it's a good time of year. From here on out through, say, March, because, you know, late February is when we came across that new nest site. So got some stuff down the road here, some stuff on the horizon to get into. So that's what I will be up to. Focus on hunting here for a couple of days at the end of the week. And after that, back to my original passion. Until next time.
All right. Well, Shane, thanks for joining me today. We'll be back soon with another episode of Monster X Radio. And until then, keep it squatchy, everybody.
Thank you for joining Monster X Radio.